Blog Talk Radio.
Wow. Okay, welcome to Faces of Success Radio and TV. We have T Wisdom and we have Jonathan Coleman in the house tonight. And we are talking about racism again tonight. We're, you know, that's been another topic that is has hit society like crazy, actually. That's my best way to explain it. And we have a special guest. I mean, and this woman has done everything from being the president of Martin Luther King's cabinet, Miss Edith Bush, to you name it. She's walked side by side with President Obama. They're doing all kind of marches on racism and everything, writing books, you name it. And we are very, very honored to have her on. I believe she is 86. I don't want to get it wrong, so I'm going to let her come on and let her tell her story. But this is a very epic moment for us this evening. And so we're going to just kind of dig on in and start talking about it because, as I said, it's been a huge problem just every single day. I mean, there's some challenges that I have faced personally where I was just driving down the street and, you know, people outside of their race had got behind me and they actually tried to run me off of the road.
Hey, I did it a few times, but I'm aggressive. I stopped.
No. So, I mean, they actually have tried to run me, you know, off of the road to where I lost control of my vehicle. Want to say it's a very, very painful feeling when you know when you've been disrespected like that, basically, you know, you've been disrespected, violated in every kind of way, and there's nothing that you can really do about it because I was caught off guard when it actually happened, and that's the last thing that I was expected. I was coming from out of another state, driving into the state of Nevada, and the next things I know, there was someone behind me. I was going 65. They ran up on my tail, so I went 75. They ran up on me some more, so I went 80. That wasn't still enough, and I was like, wait a minute. I don't think at this time I don't think this is about speed anymore. I think this is about something totally different, and God be, you know, is my witness that, you know, through the grace of God, I'm still here. But it made me feel like, you know, the body cams and the car cams and all the stuff that everybody says that is needed, I feel like it's truly needed because there's people out there that is, you know, violating us every chance that we get. I even get, you know, sometimes just dirty looks, you know, as I walk by, or I've been in stores and where they look at you like you know you got shit on you or something, you know what I'm saying? And I have to check and look down. What does she see on me? You know what I'm saying? But then I have to remember, you know, that it's just about their ignorance. And so tonight we're really going to dig super, super deep, deeper than we ever been before. And as always, we got the honors of having Jonathan Coleman and T Wisdom up in here and as the co-host on the show for tonight. And so let's make this night a memorable one as we welcome Miss Edith into our studio. So I'm going to give you the floor, T Wisdom and me.
Welcome, welcome. Yeah, like you're saying, the skeletons of racism is out the closet now, you know.
Yes.
And us as a people, we have to have our awareness antennas on. You know, we have to start moving in groups. You know, we have to really communicate and be aware of our surroundings, whether it's, you know, a special outing, grocery store run, whatever it may be, going to the gas station, just simple things. We are targets now, you know, more so than ever. Not only targets by the police, but by the hidden racism. And there is a lot of hidden racism. Like Ms. Pearl said, just the other day, I was driving. A black car pulled up on the side of me. A white dude rolled down the window, and he flexing his little white power signs and shit. It was funny to me. It's hilarious. Yeah. But that just goes to show an insignificant that they lack within themselves. But us as a people, though, it's time for us to be vigilant. Vigilant in love. Vigilant in awareness. Vigilant in understanding, and vigilant in standing firm on what we stand for.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. And so when you hear we need to take a stand, you know, that kind of just puts chills all over my body because, I mean, taking a stand means you're really gonna have to put up a fight to take a stand at this point because
yes.
You know, you're gonna have to be willing to almost go to jail at this
especially
point.
Especially when we're not out looking for trouble or causing trouble.
Never.
Then when it presents itself, we have to be ready with the sword, you know, to take off the head of the snake.
Yeah. And what is your suggestion as a start?
Well, as I said again a while back, and I think one of the brothers on Hidden Color said it too, that racism was born to die. Before it even became an issue, it was already born to die because it was unnatural to every society on the planet.
Right.
So what does that make racism? That make white supremacy racism the world's enemy. Because every race on this planet have a story.
Right.
How the evil of white supremacy has taken from them,
right.
Stolen from them, murdered them, raped them, pillaged them, and everything you can think of to them. And that doesn't matter if you're darker or lighter than me or any of us here. It has happened to every melanated people on this planet. Now, the goal to say... that now that we're dealing with all this COVID thing and people being secluded and things being shut off, everyone's starting to come out with their little hiding shells now because they frustration and they stress and they structures of what they feel should be their supremacy is starting to come to an end to the point where you guess what? Y'all finna be even Steven. Everybody's finna start from the same plateau.
Right.
And we're gonna see who's going to win. And remember that video we talked about a long time ago, Pearl, about the guy who was saying all the kids were there and said, you can have this $100.
Right.
Remember?
Yeah.
And he was saying certain things that show you white privilege.
Yeah.
Well, white privilege is being assaulted right now.
Right.
And a lot of people, maybe the young women don't see it, even though I see a lot of Karens around, too, now. You know what a Karen is? Y'all know what the Karen is?
I'm not familiar with that.
No, on the web or net, you don't be on like much as we do. But the Karen is the white woman that always call the police. Yeah, he's over here standing here. Oh, he's walking. Or they always call the police on you. So that's the Karen.
Yeah, I have one of those.
So now we're getting a little Billies right now because you know I had a situation when I was coming from me and my wife in the car. My wife said a lot of people been. Bumper, getting on your bumpers and everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then what I would do if they get on my bumper, I would speed up, get to the side, and I would speed up on them and look at them and be like this, because you know I'm not the type of dude
that let them go.
I'm aggressive. I will. I'm one of those ones.
Right.
Okay. I will knock one of those cats out and go all the way there. That's why I mean we sacrifice. You know, we can't keep taking them thinking that, we got to get rid of them. They trying to be evil with us and want to start treating all of us evil, but they know who to do that to.
Right.
Okay? Because when I walk in places with Malcolm X and all this, you know the stuff I wear.
Yeah.
So I walk in there head high. I'm not playing. You have to give
that's
them the aura
say,
that we're not playing
yourself,
anymore.
Your right. energy.
So when you come, they're going to submit to you because, as I say, moral persuasion doesn't work with all Caucasians.
Right. It sure. It certainly.
I just your posture. You can walk into a room in a store. Your posture.
Yes.
How you carry yourself.
And I'm not saying start
it
no
can be
problems
a room
with
full
them.
Of racism.
I'm not saying that. Because the thing is to get rid of the aggressive me. They want to get rid of the killmonger.
Right.
Okay? Not saying that the killmonger is always right because I go out of pocket sometimes. I'm not perfect. But
right.
I'm ready. I love us.
Yes.
To the point that I will go there.
Right.
You know, police get the pull on me. I'm like, oh, what you want, officer? Handle the thing. Hey, you need your wallet. I'm like, nope, you're going to get it. Where your camera at? I want to talk to your camera. Yep, you get it. They get mad at me because I accuse them for their evil before they even do it. But I'm doing what they say. And I have to say this. Can I say this, bro? Can I say this?
Yeah.
Black people, stop trying to get a non-persuasive person that based your life on his laws like they're trying to do now. They're trying to justify that the man that did that to George, it was he was in compliance of the so-called law that there's a certain type of, you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to get to that, get us to understand the code to this stuff. When we get pulled over by police, please stop asking them what you do. Let him accuse you for whatever, okay? Don't keep saying what I do and move and do all that because they're like a pet bull, a dog, that if you make a pet bull, you do some aggressive stuff, the dog will be happy, but you do the extra, they turn right into that, you get what I'm saying? That's the police.
Right.
And that's what we're dealing with. We need to stop talking to them. They can't communicate. They don't teach them communication on like they used to do. They still never did. I'm just saying, we ain't seeing no black cops killing white people and black people that way. So there is, how can I say it, a racist analogy going on.
Right.
In the police department, in the world in general.
Yeah.
And we need to get rid of racism. Racism must die. Every race that has been afflicted by white supremacy.
On a deeper understanding, what's some tools that us as a collective, as the people as a collective can use in a day-to-day routine, a day-to-day going to work, dealing with the boss with a little racism in his back pocket? What's some solutions that we all can be equipped with to deal with these situations? Because a lot of us deal with racism and it's going to go off the handle. May jeopardize our job. May jeopardize a livelihood or whatever.
Well,
what's some aspects that we can level-headedly, intellectually deal with racism and put racism in its place and still keep our dignity of self?
Well, for one, we ain't never going to get no dignity in their eyes. Let's put that straight. Regardless of how we act, we can be the most moral or most peaceful and open person, and they still going to say that we are wrong.
Okay.
Okay.
We ain't got to prove nothing to them no more. We got to prove stuff to us now
that
we are one of these people.
The only thing you can do in their house is all you can do is like, I ain't got time for this. Do what you got to do until you can get yourself financially stable. If you had a job such as me and other places and all of us, learn that trade so you can become competition for that same damn boss. Is that one?
Right.
Okay, so you have an agenda. You say, I'm going to save up $10,000 with this fool, and I know what he's like. The same way with different jobs.
Go to your job thinking a business mind.
Exactly.
Don't go thinking as an employee, thinking as, okay.
Yeah. So some of us need that because we don't have the black people to give us that financial
support.
Some of these brothers just can't walk away. We got to understand that. So some of us can understand this. Don't say, I'm trying to make the boss business the best so I can be the president. No, be your own dang president and CEO.
The flip side coin of the racism, though, we have to challenge ourselves to be great and bring out our greatness and our own recognition.
We'll never figure it out.
You know what I mean? Because steady searching for acceptance from somebody else does not give us self-worth.
Okay, well, we got a caller that just came on, so we're going to take this caller right now.
Caller
from 561 area code. Hi, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm good. And yourself, Pearl? This is Pierre.
I'm fine. Hi, this is Pierre from Florida.
Oh, my home, where I was born.
All right, you're on the air right now, and we're talking racism tonight, and so we'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, actually, when it comes to racism, I believe that, you know, you really have to go all the way back to history.
Exactly.
And it's something that no one, I don't believe will ever understand. I don't think it's something that anyone at this particular point in time ever get to the bottom of. I do believe that, you know, it's truly come to the forefront now with the type of leadership that we have, you know, in office at this particular time. You know, not to name any names or anything like that. I'm sure if anyone takes any looks at the way this country's going, then they can determine exactly, you know, where this conversation would lead. But in saying that, I've been associated basically with racism and following racism and marching and protesting with quite a few individuals in my lifetime and standing in for what I believe in, because I've always been a firm believer that, you know, if you see a good fight, get in it. And the problem I foresee is first we have to identify what some of the solutions can be. And then the most difficult part is being able to sit down and to get people to actually identify with what has transpired with racism, with not just blacks, but with all minorities. Because, see, my thoughts on racism is that, you know, the United States is one of the most racist, you know, countries, you know, in the entire world, and it's been completely built on racism from the beginning, you know, on prosperity, you know, greed, you know, selfishness, and racism and superiority. And until we're able to get to the bottom of why an individual has to think this way in order to feel superior or to feel equal or to feel good about themselves, then you will never solve the problem with racism. And that's my belief. You know, I believe in marching. I believe in fighting for the rights to, you know, be treated fairly. But until we solve that problem, I really don't see how far, you know, we're going to get in my lifetime anyway. I hope that we're able to see it in some of the young people that are picking up the fight now.
Right. Well, Pierre, I have a couple of questions, you know, because, like, we have been right here in Nevada, have been faced with, I don't call out the cities and the towns and streets and addresses because of our topic, but in the state of Nevada, we have been faced with, you know, racism, you know, being, you know, what you'd want to call, you know, what are you, bulldogging you, you know, basically, and ran on, trying to run you off the road, you know, warned not to be walking at night and stuff like that. That was like one of the first things that I heard when I got here, you know, and I know you're all the way in Florida. How has racism affected your life on a personal level, and the, you know, the things that you have faced in Florida yourself or witnessed yourself?
Well, basically here in Florida, I really kind of feel pretty fortunate, and the reason I say that is living here in the South. You know, even before, because I've been here since 1988. So being here since that particular time, you know, I've seen quite a couple of different changes. And traveling through Florida through the early 70s in the military, 60s and 70s, you know, I was able to see it, you know, at that point when Alligator Alley was at its finest. You know, of course, Florida is always, the area of Florida always has been, you know, an area of, you know, quite a few injustices. But myself, I've been pretty fortunate in the fact that, it's not on paper here. In saying that, it's not hidden as much. Here, if you can more or less feel, and if you're going to be discriminated against, you pretty much will know.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not something where, since I've lived up north as well, you know, where up north, you know, you might get smiled at, you know, get smiled in your face and everything else, and then find out all your contracts might be canceled. But
right.
here in Florida, at least in what I've experienced in the South anyway, is that at least
right.
here, if you walk into an office, you pretty much well can feel the vibe on whether or not if you're going to be accepted, if that meeting's going to go well, you know, or not. So, you know, it's not so much as hidden as it is in other places.
Right. Okay, and we have a very I know you have a history on Miss Edith Bush, and she's, I'm in hope, still going to be an exclusive guest for the interview tonight. I'm with deep concerns of her age. I'm just wondering, you know, if she's still going to be able to call in. But whether she does or not, I would like, just for the health of the listeners, if you could be able to just elaborate a little bit on, you know, her history, where she's been, what she's done, you know, since you've grown up and been around her most of your life.
Well, actually, I guess I'm one of Mrs. Bush's best, biggest fans, because I actually call her mom. I met Mrs. Bush in 1988, and at the time that I met her, I was raising my son alone here in Florida. And basically, I was starting a new company. So I kind of knocked on her door and asked her if she needed, you know, a roof put on her home or windows or anything of that nature, because it was a construction business. And honestly, she just opened her heart and decided that she was going to give me the opportunity. So in doing that, she introduced me to quite a few, you know, city officials, the mayor, and quite a few other people, and got me involved with projects with the Black Historical Society, with the Martin Luther King Memorial Foundation, got me involved with other projects that she was associated with women that were fighting to keep their children that needed repairs on their homes or things like that, just different renovations for the elderly and everything else. So basically, she's had her hand involved in civil rights from the beginning, because she's been with about maybe 12 different presidents. Including President Obama himself, and you know, I actually am kind of at a loss of words to describe Mrs. Bush, because she's very humble. But at the same time,
at the
same time, she's a real fighter.
She's 83 years of age, and I'm just, you know, I'm thinking right now, unless you know, those numbers have changed since the last time we spoke. But just, you know, I have concerns with her being in on a different time zone, you know, being
right.
able to keep up with us right now. So I don't know if
right.
we're going to have her on this evening. And if we don't, just for our
listeners. As a matter of fact, I hate to cut you. As a matter of fact.
Hold on one second. Just for our listeners
okay.
that are listening tonight, that if we don't have her on tonight, we will be bringing her on, but it's going to probably have to be a daytime show, because, like I said, right now for her it's probably like 9 o'clock, and, you know, at 83, you ain't kicking it at 9 o'clock at night no more. You know what I'm saying? And that's just keeping it 100. But I really, really, truly appreciate it. But I am wanting to, I have some other guests that have tapped on the line, and they are listening in about racism tonight. I mean, and as I said, for those of you that are just tuning in, we've had faced some issues here in Nevada and other states and counties that are just totally unacceptable. You know, it's a really scary and sad feeling to just walk into a place and a person wants to size you up and look you up and down, or not want to serve you, or not want to, you know, based on your skin color, and you've never done, you know, anything to them in this whole world. I had a I had went to the Social Security office to go get my Social Security card renewed because mine looked like it had been through the ringer, and there was a Caucasian male that was there, and he must have been at least 78, 79 years old, and as I'm walking out of the Social Security office, he's laid flat down on the sidewalk on his back. And I, you know, it scared me. And I ran. I was like, sir, I'm like, are you okay? And he said, he lays up, and the first thing that he says to me, and I'm not kidding you, I put this on God up above, he says, I be damned, all my life, he said, I couldn't stand niggers. And the first time I'm in need, he said, the first time I'm in need, here's that's the first person that stuck their hand out to help me get up off the ground.
I've been told that on multiple occasions, too.
And I mean, I didn't know whether to leave them on the ground or pick them up.
They didn't say that.
I was like, okay. And so I just kind of let it go over my head. And I'm like, I went to try to help him up, and the man only had one leg. And let me tell you the rest of my story. So I was like, sir, I was like, he was like, I don't have no family. And he just went on and went on and went on. So I was like, sir, where do you live? I don't have anywhere to live. I took that man home that day, fed him a hot meal, let him take a shower, took him to go get clothes and stuff to put on his back and stuff. He ended up staying at my house, but I had to convert my garage into a room because I didn't feel comfortable with him in my house because I didn't know him like that. But do you know, that man ended up becoming one of my best friends. His name was Jack. He actually, not even 3 months later after residing with me, he kept coughing. And I said, you sound like you need to go to the hospital. And he was like, no, I don't think I need to go to the hospital. And I was like, yes, you do. I went back out there to check on him again, and I seen blood. And I took him to the emergency room. And the next day they said he had passed. But the lesson in all of that was for him before he left.
The respect for us that he had disrespect, because he probably was learning that before he died.
That was the lesson for him.
And he was saved for his comfortability.
You know,
yeah.
And so. Yeah.
We are God. We are indeed the Most High original. We are the children of the Most High.
Energy speaks before words, anything.
Yeah.
Energy speaks.
And you know, I done that for a couple white people. Because, you know, I have that mentality where I ain't giving white people nothing. I keep it 100. But it always be, where it be a certain white person, I'll be like, something telling me to help this one for some reason.
Yeah.
And then when I help me say, man, it's crazy, man, for me to be white and. But they don't say it that way to me.
Right.
They're like, man, and you guys always the one to help me, man. God bless you. You truly is a child of God. That's what they say.
Right.
And I just be like, don't worry about it, man. You know, I don't like praises. So I be like, you know, be cool, man. You know, do what you can do. With this
there
spirit.
Are some genuine,
you know,
humble
some
white people.
They
you
have
know
to
mean?
Learn struggle, though. They have to.
Within struggle, you learn character.
Within
struggle, you learn character. That don't have nothing to do with skin color.
Right?
Within struggle,
right.
You learn character.
The ones that's up there, high sedity, that's living off of oppression money, you know, those ones down there are the ones, whether they know it or not, have a big voice, even though it's silence because they feel that that's because they don't have.
Those that grew up entitled. You
so
know, they were also trained in racism. They were also, you know what I mean? It was a daily, it was fed a daily spoonful or two of some racism somehow, some rhetoric
or
somehow
to Klan meetings,
throughout their day growing
up. Old, he was there watching cats getting hung and strung up as a kid.
Even in modern day, you know what I mean? Because there's kids that never
right
grew
now.
Up amongst black kids, you know what I mean? And then they got to go play the black school.
We've been compromising with this racism for so long, is that the fact that we humbly blind ourselves to it.
Mm.
The reason why I say we humbly blind ourselves to it is because no matter how, like I got in my book, no matter how good and how moral we try to treat this person who's of the nature of them, like it's of a lot of our nature to have rhythm. It's in our nature. Just like every animal have a certain quality nature about them,
mm-hmm.
whether you like some of them or not.
Mm-hmm.
Understand racism is a moral defect.
Yes, and I say racism. Yeah. And the moral defect had to come for those who felt inferior to those that they seen throughout the diaspora of the world who had these vast civilizations.
Right.
How do you come from a cave to being on top of everything? You have to step on somebody's head and then erase stuff so you can.
I mean,
be seen
they take
that.
Pride in the conquerism, and they, you know,
yeah.
they label those they heroes,
you
the conquering.
You
know, but when any other race, you know, praises their heroes that fought back against an oppressor,
they
it's
don't
a problem.
Get no flat.
You know what I mean?
They don't
so,
get no flat.
Well, this is not that, you know, this is not, we're not representing hatred. We're not representing racism. When Channel 3 comes on and talk about Black Lives Matter, that's all we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Black Lives Matter, the racism that truly exists, the KKK that truly exists, the problems that we are faced with, our children that are faced with, you know what I'm saying? I mentioned that on another show, actually, where, you know, I'm afraid to even call the police. I'm afraid that, you know, I would want to call the police to get help let me give you an example. Let's say you got a teen out of control. Back in the day, your parents used to be able to call the police and go, hey, I want you to come over here and scare the shit out of my son,
yeah,
just to get him straightened up.
Them.
And they would come out just as friendly as ever and scare the shit out of your child. Right, not come out shooting them.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, you can't call the police and say your my son just hit me, or he's got a gun, or he's out of control right now, which all the youth these days are out of control. But you cannot call the police on your child these days and tell them anything and think that by the time it's over that child might still be alive, because they're coming to kill. You know what I'm saying? And that's
Pearl.
Very, very scary.
Pearl, can you
go
hear
ahead.
Me?
Yes, I can hear you.
I have Mrs. Bush on the line.
Hi, Mrs. Bush. We are so happy
Hi, Pearl. How are you? And how's everybody else?
Fine. We are here and excited. I was concerned that you might not be able to make the show this evening because of the time and your age and everything over there. So I was. I am so happy to have you in our studios this evening, and I would just like you, if you would, give everybody an introduction about yourself, what you've done, where you've been, and where you are right now.
All right. My name is Edith Coleman Bush, and I was born in Andalusia, Alabama, about an hour and a half from Troy, Alabama, where John Lewis was born. And I just happened to have met him when he came to West Palm Beach at one time to meet with Congressman A.R.C. Hastings. And I am very much into the Black Lives Movement. I think, you know, we're going to have to be involved. I'm the executive director of the Martin Luther King Coordinated Committee of West Palm Beach. And we have autistic and educational programs for children. And our members of our organization they belong to churches, synagogues, and things like that. So I'm very much involved with the voting issue here. And I hope that people will complete their census applications too.
Yeah, well, Mrs.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Bush, let me ask you this.
Yes.
I know that there's an event coming up. I believe that is in Washington or Chicago. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that and what's going on with that?
Well, no. Our organization is not involved in that. I don't know which one you're talking about. I mean, because the next event, I think, is at the end of this month, is the 55th anniversary on the March on Washington. With Al Sharpton, is that the one?
Yes, that's what she's talking about.
Yeah, well, we would really love to go because our organization did sponsor buses to both inaugurations of President Obama, and so that's why I am a Democratic precinct chairperson here in West Palm Beach, and we are encouraging persons to vote. And register to vote and everything like that, early voting. I should hope that the churches would organize a Souls to the Poll event. So we are encouraging people to go to the 55th anniversary of the March on Washington. We are very much into supporting getting rid of racism. Racism is systemic racism is just unbelievable. I was listening today where this young man, a man got a life sentence for stealing a saw or something like that, and that's not real. That's not good.
That is not good. That is like the worst I think I've heard so, you know, thus far. But you know, go ahead. Speak your mind.
Like she said, though, the systematic structure of the racism is what needs to be dismantled. You know, the individuals with the racism embedded with them, that comes from a complex situation. But the systematic structure of racism is what needs to be dismantled.
And I believe we have to be more honest with racism. We have to take racism beyond civil rights. It didn't start there. Racism started way beyond that. See, I mean, civil rights, I respect the whole movement. But I say, what is the difference of the same white government we have today than it was then?
Right.
Explain to me, I'm sorry, how the Democrats...
Well, law enforcement and judges, I think that should be term limited on some of the people. I mean, look at the Supreme Court. They are on there with 1930, 1940 mentalities. And look at the judges and the courtroom situations and everything like that, the prosecutors, the public defenders. And then I think they are misinforming with the defund the police. To me, not only defund the police, that's not it. Put in programs and teach them how to act or whatever and take away the look what they've done with Breonna Taylor, not even done anything about that. And so that's not enough. As far as I'm concerned, they still got their knee on Colin Kaepernick's neck. They haven't hired him. So racism is just out there.
Yes,
okay,
ma'am.
No, I'm not saying that.
Oh,
racism and never died. It never went anywhere. It never been slowed down. In fact, it's more aggressive and more starting to become more out front because now we got all these networks to.
But we have to fight racism.
So
we have to be able to fight.
This
it.
Is what I'm trying to. This is what. Okay. Okay. Miss Bush.
Is where we lack.
We have Jonathan Coleman. We have T Wisdom in the studio. Me, myself, Miss Pearl, and we also have Donald Griffin. Also. That are all co-hosts on Faces of Success Radio and TV. And I just wanted to say again to you, for the listeners that are just tuning in, we have Miss Edith Bush on for an exclusive interview this evening. We really, really are, you know, man, honored to have you. 83 years old.
The energy in her voice got
88.
88. I said it, man. It meant some numbers could have changed. Yeah, my God. I hope you know what I'm able to see the 88. But we have another caller on the line, so we're gonna bring that in, and then when we come back, we're gonna have some words from Donald Griffin. So hold on. We got a caller from 281 area code. Can you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hello.
Yeah.
Hello. My name's Gigi Watson. I would.
Hi, Gigi.
Hi.
Hi, Gigi.
Hi.
Hi. Okay, go ahead, Gigi.
What I was listening to, what you all saying, and I can't believe you're 88 years old. Hello, ma'am.
I'm Edith Bush, and I'm 88 years old.
Wow. I said, wow.
Yeah, I'm taking part in a lot of marches. My dad
like
was.
I'd just like to be able to have your 88-year-old hands and give me a hug one day. You know what I'm saying? Because I know ain't nothing
to West Palm Beach. Come on. Come on to West Palm Beach. We would be happy to have you.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to make it a point to do that just because I want to be able to say that I was in your presence. Believe that. So, so Gigi, what was your question?
To the lady who's 88 years old. I forgot her name.
Mrs. Bush.
Yeah, Edith Bush. Mm-hmm.
Ms.
Uh-huh.
Bush.
Yeah, Gigi.
How long have you been dealing with racism?
Well, I was born in I came from Alabama, and and back then it was such very very segregated. I received my bachelor's degree from Bethune-Cookman. And a master's from Florida Atlantic University. But I was raised in a segregated school where in Alabama, where the black school was made of lumber and everything like that. And then across town, the white school was a brick school. And then when winter time came, we had to be warmed by a coal burning stove. But across town where my aunt, my cousin worked, they had central heating. We would from home to the school in the rain and what have you. And then, but the white kids were riding buses and waving at us and making noise out of the windows. So I know what that was. We were using the books that the whites had used before. And then when I after graduation from college and I began teaching in Palm Beach County, and then integration began to take place, the white schools only wanted blacks who had master's degrees in their school system. But then they sent to our school system anyone who was white that when they wanted to integrate. So I've gone through all of this all of the time, a lot of time. My father was the president of the NAACP in Alabama. He went to Dr. King's funeral. And I hope you all look at our website, and you'll see the Martin Luther King Landmark Memorial here. We have a curriculum for this Landmark Memorial and to tell the history of racism. I've been a member of the National Organization of Women. I've seen Mrs. Roosevelt and Marian Anderson at Bethune-Cookman. So I've gone through this. This is unbelievable. And every year we have a theme. Like our theme this year is his dream was for a moment, but our success is the movement. And I have been to some Black Lives Matter rallies here in Palm Beach County. I didn't get out because I couldn't walk. That sat in my car and cheered them on. So I think this is a new generation. I'm really excited about what the Black Lives Movement is doing, because not only in education and housing, in law enforcement, this racial bit has to quit.
Yes, ma'am.
Wow.
Okay.
Have you ever met Martin Luther King?
No, I didn't meet him. My dad went to the funeral. I was kind of young at that time, so I never was in an area. But members of our group members of our organization who were people who was with the Daughters of the American Revolution, had the problem when Paul Wilson had to go to New York for the first time, what have you, and all that. And I've been in groups that have been to some areas, some sessions where Dr. King was. Yes.
Oh,
all right.
Thank you.
Okay.
Not
so
to mention.
But right now we have a peace camp. We have a peace camp, and the peace camp was sanctioned by President Obama. And we call it the pen and pencil, the pencil meaning you get an education, because we teach children, you know, the historic African Americans and what have you, and then the pencil says get an education, be someone, then the pen means stay out of the penitentiary. So we do that every Saturday night. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, Gigi, we want to thank you for calling in. Please hold just one second here. We want to ask. I don't want to keep Miss Bush too long because it's getting late. But we're going to give the floor to Donald. Donald, you can introduce yourself and speak and tell what you do.
Donald Griffin, founder of New Generation Dare, and I am an outreach individual who goes out there into the community and trying to develop for, I like what you said about getting in there and voting, teaching these kids not to say F the police, but to become the police, to monitor our own neighborhood, get them in there to vote, develop leadership skills. We got to get back into our kids' mind. We got to take them phones away from them. We got to take whatever germination, polluting their germination, we got to take away from it and put something new into there. We got to start feeding our own community, not just food, but just education as well. And what we're looking to, he was blessed to have open up something which I call the Black Wall Street First Library, which, you know, provides on Saturday, no child left unfed. Whatever he allowed me to bring in there, that's what I'm going to bring in. I got office supplies, and I'm just going to do my best to make sure that we can do something for our community, to make sure that they see it and they understand what we're doing. And this is to develop more leaders that look like us, educate them, and make sure that they're in there for a right reason. Like your logo said, go to school and come back and put it into your community. And that's what we need to do. We got to sit our kids down, educate them. Go be police officers, go be lawyers, go be teachers, and then bring this back. Don't go off to the white neighborhood and spend your money. Come back and build us up and teach the next one.
Amen to that. And so, Ms. Bush, I truly want to see if there's anybody else that has any other questions.
With all her experiences and all her action, putting the best foot forward in all she's done. I would just like some of your input on how you feel about the integration segregation aspect of society.
I think this, you know, there are certain nationalities in Palm Beach County that we have. There are 87 nationalities here. And I just want to make a statement, and then I'm going to come back to that. At our annual breakfast, we had this past year, Yvette Miley, who's the African-American vice president of MSNBC, and we had close to 2,000 people at our breakfast. Other countries and other places target certain businesses in the United States, and it upsets me that way. I mean, it doesn't upset me, but when you look at it, when you look at the hair and the nail business, the Asians have targeted that, and who are the most clients? We are. The Japanese targeted the automobile industry, and that kind of thing. Then we have businesses in the country or in our areas that we don't support each other. They support each other. There's a little Chinatown, there's a little this town, there's a little town over here, over there, but we can't keep the Renaissance, the Harlem this or whatever in our own communities. Even when the families leave it to the children, they don't keep them going. So we have got to support each other. That's what it is. And other people come over and over here, and then they target certain things that bring us to them. And you know, like it's
right.
That's the problem. Mm-hmm.
Amen. And you know, and the way they structure it is, you know, they mm-hmm. they buy a whole little unit, a whole little complex, and in that complex mm-hmm. they have one of mm-hmm. each of what they do,
yes.
and then they go to another region and set up and let mm-hmm. another family set up a liquor store, a cleaners, a nail shop,
mm-hmm.
you know, food,
mm-hmm.
you
a little
know,
food
services,
store,
you know, whatever is all they got it all locked down. But when you try to bring this into our community of color, what they want to do is come back and rob you. They want to come back, figure out a way of shutting
mm-hmm.
you down and you know,
mm-hmm.
stabbing you in the back some kind of way. You know what I'm
mm-hmm.
saying? Or being your competitor because you're doing, you know, you're doing good. And so they want to make sure that they can step on your toes in that type of way, which is really foul.
Mm-hmm.
We've been blessed enough that we've all been able to come together, and each and every one of us is starting our own independent businesses, from hair to
mm-hmm.
cars to books to
mm-hmm.
schools to
mm-hmm.
we're going to make
mm-hmm.
it happen, and we're holding it down, and it's something, it's going to be a new face here
mm-hmm.
in the state of Nevada,
mm-hmm.
and it's starting
mm-hmm.
right here, and it's starting right now.
Okay.
All right.
Can I lay something in here?
Mm-hmm.
I see history repeating itself because the generation that came before me didn't know their history. I'm going to explain this why, but we're dealing with it in a more hostile way. From being a researcher and a historian from Black Wall Street, once it was destroyed,
mm-hmm.
we left technology alone. And now we're back
mm-hmm.
reconstructing ourselves in the same fashion that our ancestors did it then. Yes, we're dealing with police brutality and brothers that steal and rob. Let's think about how did they deal with that. Now, if we all be educated that this is what our agenda is despite our differences, and this is what we're aiming to do, if I need a tire put on, brother, I'm just going to come to you. I don't care if you got it in your garage. You know, these are the things that they was doing to structure Black Wall Street. And a lot of people today that when I talk about this, I'm talking about my own as well. They get scared of saying, I don't just want my stuff just to be around that. So we have to have a code, like they had a code in
back
the 30s. They had
code
a code
of
in the 60s.
Somewhat.
Okay,
right.
And let's understand that we do need security. Because even though the civil rights movement go for a peace movement, they still have the beacons of rights. Because I know the history and the laws of these things. And I ask all the Democrats, I ask all the NAACP and all the black old movements, what happened to the Pope People's campaign that Martin Luther King was aiming for? I don't hear that, but I see people putting bits and pieces of it. The structure was already there, and we ain't focusing on that part. We're focusing just on the marches.
Mm-hmm.
I'm focusing on what he figured out later on when he found out that he integrated us into a firing house. Let's keep it all the way 100, because I don't believe in history just one way to satisfy me. I want the whole thing so I can be balanced. That's what we're missing as a people. We're being told one side, but we ain't being told both sides so we can make
right.
a balanced understanding of what we want to do. This is how I learned how to get people involved, by not trying to say, this is so good about Egypt and Africa, but I ain't telling them about all the bad stuff that our people did neither. So when they find that out, oh, you kept this away from me. Now they ran from other knowledge to come in, so they on their own out there wild again. So we have to be honest with everything. Racism, police brutality, we have to have security. We have to have a lot of things. I've seen the successes and the failures of all the movements from Noble Drew Ali all the way here. The only problem that I've seen, they was all separate. And they all had partial solutions for our problem, but they never all came together as one and made it. That was the problem. And if we don't do that today, it's a wrap for our next generation. We got to put
yeah.
all those differences away. We have to come with new things with new approaches, with some of the success points from all of them. This is how I'm writing the history in the books I'm writing, that I'm taking, like, Martin Luther King situation on this part was good. Malcolm X was this good. I'm not singling out Malcolm X just for Martin Luther King. I'm not singling out Malcolm X just for Martin Luther King. We have to respect all success boundaries no matter where they came from, and we have a problem with that as a people. You a Christian, I ain't messing with you. You a Muslim, I ain't messing with you. We got to get away from that.
Well, we have some other callers on the line, one from 832 area code, and I agree with you at 100%, but I agree with you 100%, but I'm just going to piggyback on it just a little bit, because this
old organizations that ain't did nothing, doing nothing no more. They telling us to follow these same played out rules that's not working. This is why the youngsters saying we ain't trying to hear that. If you ain't coming with nothing fresh, you're not getting the new generation. You're going to keep getting people that's saying that we just need to be this. No, we need security too, and we can still be that too. But we need security right here. You can call it whatever you want to call it, Panthers, whatever. We need people to establish to do what the sister's been doing. We need to protect her to continue that process she's doing along with the others. If we don't have all these security blankets on all of our movements that's beneficial to all of us as a whole, and I don't really bring in minorities, but the minorities will have to come in here too, because we always bring them in because we're always doing all the work. And we have to call them out saying, if you're going to do only Mexican things, don't expect us to do none for you, because y'all running around being racist with them. Mm-hmm. I see all the stuff all on my pages, all the racist stuff, okay, from Mexicans, Chinese, and even our own people. So we all that have to be addressed too, because I'm not finna work with people that think they're better because the Caucasian told him that I'm going to give you a little bit more, give you grants when you come here so you can overdo the brothers, the foundational blacks that have been here suffering for so long, and we still don't get these outlets. I'm not allowing that to continue. I don't care, not saying no disrespect to elders. Some elders have to understand that we're going to have young guns that's going to come up here and say, we're not going to use that same format. We're going to protect what you're doing, and we're going to finish this revolution that we have to do. And that don't mean killing and fighting. That means getting our own businesses. Stop spending your money on all these European things. Stop funding these cats to continue to oppress our children in the future with their businesses so they can't have them in their community. We have to boycott stuff that don't invest in our community. I see what's going on in Chicago. I hear what's going on with my folks in Detroit. I'm born from Florida, Polk County, Lake Wales. I got folks out there too. So we have to come with new things. What you're doing with the new DARE made the DARE better, didn't
you? Well, you heard it right here on Faces of Success Radio and TV from Brother Coleman. I want to thank you for that. And we do have a caller from the 832 area code that we do want to indulge in. And as I was saying, I want to piggyback on something that he was saying, because from my standpoint of view, what I actually have seen is that from the beginning, they whipped and beat everybody because they didn't want you to be educated in the first place. So once you started having kids and raising kids, you couldn't teach your kids anything because most of them didn't know anything. Okay, so as time progressed, right, now you got the kids being taught by the Caucasian teachers. Right? And the teachers, when you go to the school, telling you every year, we got to hold little Jonathan back because he's not doing good. So now Jonathan got to hold back 5 years, and all the other kids in the class done in advance.
Yes.
Right?
Can I say something?
Yeah,
absolutely.
I look at it like this, because I work with a lot of these Europeans with the city. I don't see any of the brothers on the board. I don't see any of the sisters on the board. School board,
making no
any
making,
board to
making
make our
decisions.
Decision,
yes.
So these people are in rooms making decisions on us.
Right.
So when they change
right.
the law, they change our culture.
Mm-hmm.
Because now we got to adapt to that law that they didn't change.
Oh. Right.
You see what I'm saying?
We got to go to that caller.
Okay.
So we got a caller from the 832. Come on. Hold on. Just hold on. I'm going to bring you in. Hold on.
They taking the dreadlocks out of the job.
Okay, so we got a caller from the 832 area code. Are you there, caller?
What's up? This is Nishan L. from Mind Blowing Decisions, where we talk about life, love, and relationships. I'm so glad to be able to listen in tonight with all the things that's going on in the world today. It's really exciting to hear people just being transparent as possible. And we have to understand that we have been limited on the knowledge that was circulating in our communities, and they did a great job at keeping certain information out of our communities, like Ms. Pearl was saying. They taught us very well to be, as in the books say, in the history books say, good little Nick, so that we would not read, because they taught us that Jim Crow and hanging black people and calling them niggers and different things and degrading them to the lowest denominator to the point to they didn't have any self-respect, no self-love. And so these things took place, and I'm just excited to be able to share just a little bit. The basis that we have to get back to is this. We have to educate, as brother, I'm not sure what the brother name was that was speaking right before Ms. Pearl piggyback, but I want to say this, is that it starts in the community at home, being educated on many, many, many subjects, not just one. A lot of times I was ordained as a pastor, and as an ordained pastor, we were taught as we were being groomed to only learn from the Bible. And I think that's such a misfortune for our community of Christian believers, because there's so many other knowledge-based disciplines out here outside of faith-based that can teach us and excel us into so many different industries. I'm the owner of Creating Wealth Empire, and we do all kind of things in the community to help people get resources and things of that nature. So I appreciate the opportunity, Ms. Pearl, and I just want to say, learn etymology. That's where it come back to teaching our kids that black is a crayon color, brown is a crayon color, that is not our nationality, teaching them that the word, what do you call that, police brutality does not exist in law. That is not, if you look in the Black's Law Dictionary, that is not something we should be entertaining, because what's happening to us is terrorism. And that's what it comes down to, not racism, terrorism.
A question for you. If you went to the grocery store and you came back and your house was surrounded by the police, what would you do?
I've had that happen to me, due to the fact that I have brothers in this world and uncles and cousins. And the thing of it is, being that I was in good standing, an upright citizen, I just continued on inside of my place talking to the police officer as I was going inside and showing him who I was, and got some resolve out of it. That's my thing. I claimed all my rights. First of all, I identified myself as Michon. I claimed all my rights so that they wouldn't lay hands on me. And then I made sure that they knew that I was the only one that could speak for myself.
That was very, very well said, because most people, their response to that, when I asked them that question, they said they'd keep going. You know,
we're in a time
where we can't be.
Well, I'm standing in good citizens, so I would keep moving.
You fear that if you're so scared that you're so scared, okay. We in a time where the fear is what's killing us, okay?
Yeah.
The fear.
Yep.
And this is why you have to self.
See, I have a problem because I always enjoyed a good fight.
I'm sorry, Beer. Go ahead. We missed you. We didn't hear what you said.
Well, see, I have a problem with allowing anyone to not allow me access to my home, so. You know, by all means, I'm going to cross the line. I'm going to cross the line anyway, and
right?
I'm sure Mrs.
Yeah.
Bush knows that about me.
Oh, yeah.
I'm,
Mrs. Bush, and I wanted to say, this is Michon, and I wanted, Ms. Bush, this is Michon. I wanted to say what an honor it is to be in your grace. Thank you so much for joining our studio on Facebook Success Radio. Appreciate you.
I really appreciate it.
Thank you, too. Thank you, Pierre. Thank you.
Well, see, I'd really like to say one thing, and I've never done it publicly, but I'd like Mrs. Bush myself personally, because like I said, I met Mrs. Bush in 1988 when I was just starting the business and nobody believed in me. And, you know, she took a chance on a guy and let me fix her roof and help me buy my first work truck. And
it was great. Oh, yeah.
Dedication, your determination, your spiritual will, all that.
Ever since then, she's helped shape my son's mind that works with the school board, with the security and everything for the school system. So, you know, myself, it's been an honor to walk with her. So I'm glad that a lot of other people will get the opportunity to know what she's about, because she really hasn't told you about herself. This is truly an amazing person. Like I said, she's been with pretty much every president except one, and I'm sure everybody can figure out which one that is.
If I may, this is Michonne again. If I may just say that, Mrs. Bush, I'm a Chicagoan, native Chicagoan, and I've lived in Houston for 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother grew up in Austin, so we travel a lot, and living up in PA and just the various states. And I know that you have I kind of thought when I first traveled, I thought I wanted to kind of see where your circle was going, but you were moving around too much, and I couldn't keep up. But that's okay. You got 88 years, honey. Congratulations.
I like to travel too. I've been on a humanitarian trip to Cuba. I went to Africa, Jamaica. My brother and I went to Japan and China. I'm excited that the number of mayors of African American mayors in major cities, San Francisco, Chicago, Atlanta, we ought to be really, really proud. And now, as you know, when they started the Little Rock Nine, the first thing they did was to destroy the newspaper. And we've got to get back in there in that role to do the newspaper. The Black Wall Street, that's one of the first things that they got rid of, too. So we've got to help ourselves and our people keeping the news, so we don't have to just believe what they print about us.
Mm-hmm.
So we need our own
newspaper.
You know, the Omaha Star is one of the only black owned newspapers still around.
I got to take charge of the show real quick. I want to first again, for those that just tuned in, we have Miss Edith Bush. Edith Bush, 88 years of age on the line. We are so honored to have her on Faces of Success Radio and TV. I mean, very, very honored. We're not going to keep you on that long. I know that you're ahead of us, Miss Bush, so we're going to be closing. We are running out of time. I want to ask you if you please tell our listeners your website information for those that are listening.
Please. Our website is www.mlkccpbc.org or www.mlkccpbc.org. And thank you for allowing me to share.
Thank you for your work, your tenacity, your struggle, your sacrifice.
Yes, ma'am. So we want to thank you. We are closing. We are out of time. Thank you for being a guest on Faces of Success Radio. You guys, good night.
Thank you. Yay.
Good night.